Welcome to the Why Isn't It Working? Business and Tech Podcast, talking all things business and tech in the emerging and enterprise space. Here are your hosts, Carl Wood and Michael Hamilton.
The information featured in this program is general in nature and does not take into account your personal circumstances, needs, or objectives. Guests appearing in the program may have commercial arrangements or associations with some of the companies, organizations, or foundations mentioned. Opinions expressed by the hosts or guests are personal of nature and not to be considered as advice or an inducement to purchase products or services. Before making any investment, insurance, or financial plan decisions, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise you on whether your decision is appropriate for you. This program is for informational purposes only. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. Today I have with me Rob Kell, who's a mature age data science student from UTS. How are you going today, Rob?
Good, thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. So we just wanted to get a perspective of somebody who's actually at the start of their career, using that you've gone into data science, which is quite a popular subject around the world and online for all universities and courses in general. So I just wanted to get someone who fresh perspective on things, you know, at the start of their career, and wanted to get a view on your background and, you know, why you chose it. But look, I won't talk anymore. I'll let you introduce yourself and, you know, give us a bit of background to yourself.
Yeah, no worries. I'm currently 27, just about to complete the Master of Data Science. I've been going at it for about 2.5 years now, and I'm currently working in financial services, particularly in advisory. I've only been in the space for a couple of years now, and I've completed a couple of project like internships with two different startup companies, which has been interesting. So it's been a slight direction change. My bachelor degree was in economics and finance, I've sort of worked in the accounting space, superannuation space, investment management. So I've been in that world for about 5 years, now this is sort of complementing those skill sets that I've sort of refined. So that's sort of where it lands me at the moment. And going forward, it's all very exciting. The space is huge. It's where business decision making is going in the future. So in terms of that, it's like the prospect is very exciting, as you would know, as you understand.
I certainly do. I love it. So why economics and finance? What got you to do that first, you know, when you did your first studies?
Economics and finance, I think I've sort of always had a strong interest in like quantitative fields, sort of being like science and maths. I guess I sort of took on advice from my parents sort of told, like, we discussed what my strengths and weaknesses were, et cetera. And I think it landed in a good space, economics and finance and accounting, and sort of on the conservative side, you know, you sort of want to get a job for life, especially with the rate things change now. So I think that was like a good foundation, and I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do, but I knew that was a good field to pursue, like quite a few different professions. Yeah.
Fantastic. So when you graduated from that first degree and you went into the workforce, like, what did you notice? What were the first things that come to mind when you went into financial services?
Oh, yeah, definitely everything operates completely differently to your understanding or what you may believe it to sort of transpire. Very, very different. A lot more automated than sort of what you learn in terms of like accounting and investment management than what you would learn at university. Just sort of the general community. I feel as though it's like, especially in accounting and investment management, it's a lot of it is based on very old fundamentals, very old foundations that still transpire and propagate throughout the whole space. But as you know, like, the information age is upon us, and you can sort of see those old pillars really starting to wear down, and like these sort of new shoots starting to push through, which was the most interesting part of working in that space. I think seeing where finance is going, investment management is going as a result of data technology, AI technology, machine learning, all of those sorts of things.
Interesting. So what did you find when you were looking at the market and working in the market when you did start the job? What's your opinion on the markets, like traditional markets? You know, it could be commodities or, you know, our equities or ETFs or whatever, you know, like NASDAQ or what's your opinion after now working in a couple of years on how those markets operate?
Yeah. To be honest, I wouldn't define myself as a trader, like a heavy trader at all, probably more so an investor. But it is incredible that it's all driven, a large portion of it is driven by sentiment, which is sort of the microeconomics of individual human decision making. It's incredible that you can see a sector or a company increase by an order of magnitude of two or three, just based on how people are feeling. So I found that very, very incredible. I always used to think it was very looking at P&Ls, balance sheets, etc., which is obviously a large part of it. I find the way that markets move probably the most interesting part about it. In terms of the actual the functioning, I find they're all highly independent, but then very connected in the same way. And maybe that will change in the future to more sort of decentralized fintech model, which is sort of in the works at the moment. So that's the extent of my knowledge of markets and banking of the last sort of five decades. But it's obviously exceptionally complex.
Oh, definitely, for sure. So going in and doing a business degree or a business subject and going into the business first and getting that context, has that then educated you on why you then moved on to a data science kind of conversation or kind of what you went down that path? Is that, did that drive you down there, or was it just curiosity that you wanted to?
Look, in terms of the driving factor was actually, funnily enough, a recommendation of a friend of whom had just started working at a large research house, a large research company in Sydney. And he got the heads up on it from the IT department, of whom he worked with closely, saying like, this is the future, data science is the future. And along with that was sort of cryptocurrency. It was two major things being interesting in cryptocurrency, sort of 3-4 years ago, and being interested in data science and how they both link and how basically what the far-reaching implications of that are, how blockchain technology and all these other technologies that sit under the primary coins interrelate to core data science fundamentals. Basically what makes it up. I found that very interesting, but not really anything as a result of studying economics or finance. Basically, only the only real sort of crossover was the fact that I'm like more quantitatively defined, much stronger in sort of mathematics and sort of science fields, but had never coded a line in my life 2 years ago. And now you write thousands of lines of code and don't even think about it.
I have to say, I have to ask the question before we do go down to the data science questions, why you picked it up a bit further. What was your mathematics like growing up? Like even in primary school, even in high school, were you good at maths? Was it something that come natural to you?
I think I've always been quite good. I think I was quite sort of behind the ball in primary school, but then once I got to high school, I was sort of always in the top sort of maths and science classes. But I never had a very strong sort of academic drive. Like I like would want to excel and do well, but like by no means was a one percenter. However, like in terms of like natural ability, yeah, I think it's definitely resonates with me more, especially sort of science and stuff. Like I could talk about that for hours. Always been interested in it, but quantitative fields resonate with me more because there's often an answer as opposed to many possible answers, such as in sort of legal fields, etc. So I love debating things with my sister. You know, she's a lawyer, so if there was a right answer, there'd be no legal system. So
those are fighting words, they are.
That's right, they are fighting words, yeah.
Awesome. So basically, did you feel that helped you when you went into your data science degree or to do the studies? Do you think the mathematics helped you?
Definitely, because there's a lot of the mathematics that sits behind machine learning and artificial intelligence or deep learning models has a lot to do with calculus and probabilities. So sort of calculus is in general sense, what machine learning and AI are doing is fitting a curve through hyperdimensional space. So you could be plotting data in 10 dimensions or 1,000 or 1,000,000 dimensions. And when I say dimensions, we experience three dimensions in space and time, or four dimensions in space and time. But yeah, so these things push things into thousands of dimensions. And it does that using calculus and linear algebra. So having a firm grasp of that from basically high school mathematics and doing math subjects through economics and finance at uni, it makes it easy, you know. Like I just spent so much time practicing coding like four different languages and didn't have to work as hard with the statistics and mathematical understanding, whereas other people come from IT and coding is second nature but don't understand sort of the maths and the transformations that happen behind it. So as I sort of say, like I sort of discovered with my friend, when you have pure understanding, you don't need to remember. So it makes that a lot easier. So if you understand coding, you don't really have to remember it. It sort of comes out because the ideas are in your mind and you remember all the functions. It's the same with the maths. If you understand the transformations, you don't have to remember the formulas. It just comes out. So it's all very fast. Like I find it interesting. So that obviously helps. Like you're willing to put the time in, right? So yeah.
So how did you find, so when you actually went through the course, what didn't you know? What surprised you more than anything when you started going through the course?
It basically opened my entire realm up to what goes on behind everything you interact with. So I couldn't believe, I never truly understood how, or I still don't really understand exactly how the internet works, but I have quite a good understanding now of how networks and nodes work and exchanges, et cetera. And I found that the most surprising, how vast the internet was and basically how laborious it is transferring data and information around different places. And then it sort of made me realize that the implications of the science and the tech and the mathematical implications to make those things faster and more efficient, to get a faster link between device and the user. And when I say device and user, I mean like a phone and your mind. So like the link. I couldn't really, yeah, it was actually pretty amazing. The first day we sort of did like a linear regression, which is a very basic like machine learning algorithm, and the power that something like that has, and the fact that algorithm has sat in textbooks for sort of 250 years, But only now in the last few decades have we had the computational power to actually bring it to life. And yes, so it's incredible to think these things have existed for centuries, but only now in the information age that we're actually allowed to, it's actually practical to do these things on a laptop, like for thousands of people. So now you're getting huge pushes for leaps forward in machine learning because you've got so many people doing it. So we're sort of we're in the golden age, I believe, right now of machine learning and deep learning. So yeah, they're basically the most interesting things. How old some of the ideas are that are really just creeping in to mainstream sort of use, and just how vast everything is behind the internet and data, like, you know, behind every GUI on your screen, like what's actually going on behind there is incredible. Yeah.
Amazing. And with your learnings, obviously you're in financial services and you apply a lot of your natural practical thinking on the learnings from the course to financial services. Did you see any other industries where you think you could apply yourself from your course, what you've done on your course, like, you know, sales, marketing, agriculture, analytics, you know, did you see?
Yeah. Prior to starting the degree, I did in year 10 you do sort of work experience. So I did that at the at Sydney Airport meteorological observation tower. So I was with the chief meteorologist for like a week. Because I wanted to be a meteorologist. I was obsessed with the weather, climatology, all that sort of stuff, and sort of still am. So I'm very fascinated in the application of AI applications in forecasting weather, forecasting disasters, climate emergencies, those sorts of things, tsunamis. I find I think the greatest game, the greatest question anyone ever has is what's going to happen next? And the fact that you can map that in some sort of feature space and sort of fit a line through it and get some certainty, I think that's fascinating. And even if you can give people 2 or 3% more certainty of when a tsunami might come in some Pacific island, I think I think that would be fascinating. So yeah, sort of seeing things in those fields. Like I apply a lot of it personally in sort of the cryptocurrency space and financial markets, and then sort of other applications, healthcare for sure. Quite interested in that. So medical diagnostics on wearables. So I use a Garmin every day. So things that a lot of machine learning sits behind your Garmin in terms of, you know, measuring the amount of stress in your body, when you should recover and all these sorts of things. They're all set on basic algorithms. So and then things like for sort of dialysis machines and these sorts of tools that just make doctors' lives easier, or nurses' lives easier. So yeah, putting the technology back in professionals' hands to make their jobs easier. That's the fundamental theorem of technology. So that's, I find those sorts of things quite interesting.
Do you find that that your education has taught you to use what you've learned as complementary to what you do in financial services to your business degree? Or is it looking to replace what you do? What have you learned about how to best use your skill sets now that you're about to graduate, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The thing is, it's hard to sort of articulate the diversity of it, because you can build these things to basically answer any question. Whether it be there's sort of two sort of questions. There's classification problems and there are regression problems. So regression problems are predicting an integer or sort of numeric. So and a classification problem is sort of predicting whether something's going to be green or blue. Yeah, there's a large, so like say if you're looking in financial services, financial planning, investment management, there's huge leaps forward now in integrating sort of machine learning and AI solutions into investment management. So pushing what was once technical analysis to the next level, basically because we have petabytes of data uploaded to the internet and collected by these fund managers every day, or financial markets and every other variable that may influence them. And then another sort of interesting one that's come up is sentiment analysis on documents. So like the audit space is very laborious, costs a lot of money in terms of man hours, reading documents, making sure they're correct. So I know for a fact that there is quite a lot of sort of software out there that is it can scan through 1,000 pages of document and make sure that the right sections, legal sections, need to be there, or whether or they're not there, and that sort of that triggers a response to say, hey, we need to add this paragraph in. So a lot of it is around sort of, can we improve portfolio performance? Are all of our documents legal, meeting sort of compliance requirements? And the other one, big one, is sort of client segmentation and targeting. So I know the company that I work for, we invest quite a lot of money in marketing, and how do we target our target market to a better degree? How do we reach the people that we want to reach that we believe we can help the most? So that's all sort of possible with sort of any sort of data analytics.
No, mate, fantastic. Yeah, no, there's so much potential, as you mentioned, to how I say make things more efficient, mm-hmm. make life easier. But yeah, it's what we're saying is more complementary, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I'm sure you're seeing that every day in your job. There's just incremental changes in your job over the months, where it's just sneaking up into it and you don't even realize it. It's just there. There's the new tools there and it's all embedded in the data space.
No, definitely. It's constant improvement. There is a perception when I was younger, when I was going, you know, IT will solve a lot of problems and do everything for you, but no, it needs to be maintained. It needs to be a constant improvement process in your strategy and yeah, always trying to improve, make it better. You know, and that's part of parcel of the strategy that you've got to go on for life and the journey of it, right? But I have to move on to the financial services conversation now and the markets. So you obviously you've taken your skills and you apply it to traditional and crypto markets, as you mentioned before. Do you do it for yourself and you do it for your work, or is it just for yourself at the moment?
Yeah, I really just do it for myself and a couple of others. We have sort of like a group and we look at we sort of just float ideas, do sort of design a bit of an experiment, conduct it and sort of, you know, look, do like a bit of a SWOT analysis and basically brainstorm how we can improve. Definitely it's sort of like the greatest game, you know, like trying to predict like that. The sort of thirst for that I don't think will ever go. But yeah, it's definitely a hard one. Trying to predict financial markets is no easy task, I'm sure, as a lot of people understand. I do devote quite a lot of time to that when I'm sort of not at uni, trying to, you know, as people have told me, just to skim the market. The goal would be to outperform all fund managers in the world. And I believe that's possible with technology and good ideas. So a good idea can definitely change the world and you can create this stuff in AI. Pretty quickly as well, in days. So, yeah, I find that fascinating. Yeah.
How's your performance been going on running your own models? And what models are you using?
That's right. Yeah, the performance
is working. Are you making money?
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The money is definitely
real. Is it happening?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely been sort of. I always get brought back down to earth by comments from, you know, my parents and other people, and it's always great in a bull market, as sort of we've seen in the last sort of this financial year. But if you're looking at sort of the ASX, like a good return over the last sort of like current financial year, I reckon would be around 25%. I've developed some models. So a few of my primary models that I run would be like Arima. I ran a random forest, a gradient boosted forest, some long short-term memory neural networks, and a convolutional neural network. So I run them all in tandem. They run over a different training sets. So some only are fed 1 month of data, some are only fed 1 week of data, some are fed 2 years of data. And then they all also forecast over different periods. And then I have basically a selection scheme that sits in there as to what the final result is of a subset of them. And basically I've, without evidence to present, you definitely outperform the market, especially in the crypto space. I think everyone in the crypto space, or if you're in the crypto space, you have a long-term belief that it will propagate throughout markets and the economy for the rest of time, or for at least the next coming decades. It's great. It's great applying it to crypto in a booming market. It's like the gold rush of our age. I think you might have mentioned that to me in a previous conversation. And it's good to be a part of it. So like, yeah, it's good to be rewarded for your efforts. Of, you know, capitalism sort of rewards creative people with good ideas. So I guess that's sort of the embodiment of that. So. It's all going fabulously.
So which models are serving you? Which models have been the best performing, or which ones do you find are easier to get a return or get trust in?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I'd probably say the simpler models perform better. It's an interesting one. Definitely when I'm forecasting a longer period. So if I'm trying to develop forecasts for sort of 3 months, I would say my more complex models, like the LSTM models, that they're the deep learning network, and the convolutional neural networks, they're just better because I train them on huge data sets, sort of in the order of sort of 400 or 500 million rows of data. If I'm looking sort of over less than a month, weeks, sort of my random forests and Arima models, and I use another one called a Holt Winters. They work great. There are lots of things you can do. Like I forecast a binary outcome up or down. And then I forecast a regression line where it's actually going to go, what the prices will be, and look at how they complement each other over anywhere between 10 and 12 models. I would say shorter time periods, sort of less than a month. We're looking at sort of standard time series forecasting machine learning models like Arima and Prophet, and then also longer periods, more data. You really want to move to like the neural networks. That's where you're going to get quite good accuracy. In my opinion, that's what I found. I guess you might have a different opinion based on what you've done over the last sort of couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. Look, for me, if you go back many years ago, I would think that you, when you're trading, you're doing high frequency trading or using these models to be in and out of the market and make profit all day. You know, I've seen so many people with different approaches, and some of them write their own models. Some reuse other people's ones. Like that's what's big on the internet now is taking, downloading these models and running them, right? You don't have to write them, right? And you can just and configure them. But what I'm finding is some people have a very long outlook with their predictions. Some want to trade on the day and make money on the day, but some have very much, they might make a couple of trades with their algorithm in a week. Some might make many a day. It's just, again, it's the mindset of individuals and the way they interpret things and want to implement. But how do you find when you run your models, are you doing trades that are making money in and out of like a day, an hour, a week, a month? Like how are you?
Yeah, basically, like I said, so I'm probably more of an investor than a trader. I wouldn't do more than, I might trade twice a week. I definitely took on most of the comments sort of you've made to me over time. So I look definitely at a swing trading strategy. So I'm looking the degree of what I believe the market can go up or down, basically each week, and then I look at sort of monthly as well, and I forecast sort of 3 months just to get an idea of where it could be going, and I put a confidence interval in there, sort of 95% confidence interval. Basically I probably trade, Matt, probably twice a week, and then sort of I really try to cost it. I've sort of put like stop losses and stuff in there to sort of hedge it a little bit, you know, like crypto runs 24/7. I'm sure you've seen, you've woken up and your portfolio could be up 100%. Like that's just the way it runs at the moment. You don't want to be missing those sometimes. If your goal is to make 5%, take the 5%. Don't wait for 10% for it to drop off 20 the next day. So I've definitely made that mistake too many times.
I've got my tears already. I've got the battle.
That's right. Yeah.
We've all been, you've got to go down and go up by saying this, Mark. You've got to learn.
That's right. Yeah.
That's with any market, right? You've got to learn. You've got to have, you've got to have the stupid mistakes to make the right decisions at a later date, you know. But what do you find? So you make manual decisions with your models. So you run the models and then you make a manual trading decision. That's how you run your...
That's right. Basically my skill set doesn't have me at the... So I can sort of... set up the data pipelines, have it all sit on a like an AWS server and run, but I don't have the ability to link all the confidence to link my models with a proper exchange. So that's probably the missing piece at the moment. I do know there are some trading tools out there where you can run some of these models and have it predict. Like you say, it makes a prediction. Do you think it's going to go up 2%? Great. Well, in the next 3 hours, if it goes up 1%, place the trade and watch it go up the next two, or something like that. I don't do that. I basically run them all on over the weekend, do work on them on the weekend, make trades on Sunday or Monday, revise the trades Wednesday, Thursday, place more trades. Revise again on Sunday, so it's very active. The intervals, and I just do what you sort of instilled in me. Just skin, like I'm just looking to skin at the moment. Obviously, it's always welcome to make 100% here and there if possible. But the great larger gain is to outperform indexes and all fund managers sort of. In the world, so it's good to be at the forefront of it right now, because there is adoption, but there's not mass adoption. So it's quite good in that sense, and like you're doing, you're at the forefront of that too, and you can see the huge potential of it, and think as well, I think it was Dave that said, it's good to have your mind can make decisions with thousands of inputs instantaneously, but you don't always make the rational choice. And it's good to have a support mechanism there to bounce off. And that's sort of where it's at. Obviously the goal would be to have something that runs and is looking at the market a few times a day and making portfolio adjustments.
So complementary. Brilliant. And that's a good outcome too, you know, with a simple strategy, right? Mm-hmm. And keeping it simple, right? And did you find that you were making things complicated and now you're doing things simpler? Do you find that from your learnings?
Yeah, definitely. I think is it the concept Occam's razor? The simplest answer is typically the correct answer. I think that's right. I definitely pull back the complexity of the design because I think when you, I was finding I was losing sight of the goal, and so it's relatively easy at the moment, I think, to predict the market with high accuracy over sort of 2 days. I think if you have like good fundamentals, a big data set and the right ideas, you can do it. I've definitely been able to do that, but it's not great for a week-long strategy. And you've seen the results of that. You've got quite good results over a few days. Over a week, not so good. And that's sort of where I go, okay, well, so I can do this quite well right now. So I'll adopt this into my strategy. So yeah, that's why I sort of look at everything twice a week, because that's where my accuracy sort of lies and where we have good windows. Too far from the future, there's too much uncertainty. So you're right. Yeah, redefine the goals, define really what I'm wanting to do. If I'm trying to make, if my goal is to take 1% profit per week, congratulations, you've just outperformed everybody on the face of the earth. You've every institution. So that's basically where it's at. And sticking to your goals, you will lose weeks in a row, but statistically speaking, you'll regress back to the mean, and your model will start to sort of hit the mark. So that's very important, the discipline of it, as you would know. Like, it's easy to lose sentiment and let it get inside your head, but then all of a sudden you're on a run. So that's always interesting.
As you said, 1% of starting out, obviously, and you can expand and create your risk as you get more experienced on the strategy and refine it, and obviously you're taking the profits and simple profits and running away with that. And you know, you've got a whole journey ahead of you at the start of your career. You know, where you're going, you've got a whole life ahead of you. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. With the industry, I think you did a lot of industry placement in the time you were doing your course. What did you learn? Like, how did the industry placement help you, you know, when you did it? What was the things that stood out?
Yeah. Basically, I picked two companies. It's no secret. Like, my biggest interest is in forecasting with predictive analytics. Machine learning space, AI space. I picked two companies in the sort of startup sort of sector, if you will. One was a startup energy company, and they were designing batteries that would sit inside your home, and they wanted a model that could predict electricity electricity prices over a 24 to 48 hour period, so that the battery knew when to charge up at the cheapest points in the day, right? So we were able to do that, and I was able to beat the NEM model, the National Electricity Market model. So I think they run that in their software now. So they were quite pleased with that. I was actually very pleased with that too. So basically, I learned from that, people. It's incredible. Like, this company just saw the advertising from UTS and decided to inquire. And as a result of one of the director's ideas, it's been the perfect result for them. They got what they wanted, and they're now able to, you know, they're able to economize on electricity consumption for people. So if you're able to, you know, reduce people's electricity bills, that's a great result for every consumer. That's fascinating. And then I did another one with Morpheus Analytics, and that was great. And again, very sort of similar story, wanting to have access to this technology, currently sort of implementing it, but wanted a slightly different idea, a different approach to see what was possible. I think they got got a good result to see what the scope is on forecasting abilities right now, especially for students in the space, and help them redefine their goals as to, right, what are the next steps now? How do we improve this? Where do we focus our efforts? So basically what I've, yeah, to answer your question, I found exactly what I expected. People want to, they want to use data science, predictive analytics, and they want to implement it straight away to see if they can get results to implement in either business decision-making or improving process or improving current software they have in devices or their in their bureaucracy somewhere. So it's been fascinating, but yeah, it's been great. I've been able to find exactly what I want. So it's been good on that front. I'm sure Jab, you have something to add to that on the Morpheus front.
When I was working for the audience there, I was letting Rob work on the project for me last year on some just look at different models on the financial services markets with crypto. And what I noticed was setting those goals for yourself, you're trying to achieve them, but trying to make them happen, but then learning that sometimes it's not plausible, it's not going to work, you can't use it. But sometimes it will help you to make, when not to make a decision, when not to trade. Sometimes you always want to trade, you always want to make money, but sometimes your models show you don't do anything, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you did take a lot from that, I noticed, when you saw that last year when we finished the project and so forth. But one thing that I've seen you take from, obviously, when you worked at an energy company and, you know, and taking your skills forward, is you're not just doing it for the client you work for, you're actually doing it for yourself. What are your models? And you're learning, and the stuff you do outside of work also complements and helps you do your job better too. And it's complementary both ways. So what one question I was going to ask you is, are you planning to retire based on your models in the future, or what does the future look like for you now? That you, are you going to keep running them and, you know, providing savings for yourself, you know, buy a property or, you know, lifestyle choice decisions based on your modeling and taking profit, or what do you want to do with it now? Long term.
Long term. At the moment, the absolute most interesting thing to me is the future. What does the future look like? Can you predict the future? I think I just find that fascinating, and there's so much food for thought there. Sort of coupling that, and then sort of trying to couple it back with actual technology. So there's sort of sitting in every phone and sort of laptop now, these neuromorphic chips which hold the AI and machine learning models, and sort of companies like BrainChip, they're sort of, that's what their comparative advantage is in like producing the software and these chips. So I'd love to be a part of something like that, using the AI to predict human behavior that sits inside these chips. And I'm sure if you've seen The Social Dilemma, that's probably not what the world needs any more of, but I just find that deeply fascinating. If you can build chips that help you just help you in your day-to-day life, and whether that's designing sort of a neural network that is able to identify when you should go for a walk or when you should eat or when you are looking at a phone and that's your face there, the facial recognition, those sorts of things are fascinating to me. So I think in that sort of space, also obviously financial markets, I would love to work in predictive analytics in financial markets and then again also in sort of the healthcare space. Yes, 100%. I continue to plot for myself and sort of my friends and it's surprising. Like I'm sure you've been in the space for a lot longer than I have and just being an investor for a lot longer than I have. And as you go deeper into the realm, you go into more specific niche areas. And I'm actually finding it can be very counterproductive to what you're trying to achieve, because you might be continually looking for an edge, but how do I say it's you need the big picture and sort of at the start of this journey of acquiring all this knowledge, you need to be looking at the big picture and, like you say, keeping your goal focused. Don't get too crazy. Don't use the most complicated thing. Really try to get good generalization with your models and just get small continual improvement and don't stake your entire fortune on your model yet. There's some interesting things going on out there. I heard last year there is an investor in the US who I think he invested something like $10 million into a team of 10 data scientists and software engineers. And he's a huge punter. And he's been able to develop a model that can predict the outcome of a horse race with something like 90% AUC. So that's area under the curve. That's a classification measurement. Which corresponds approximately to 90% accuracy. So he's just printing money now, and that's incredible. You think of the amount of factors that determine the outcome of a horse race with sort of 20 odd horses. So things are very interesting. Yeah.
I know those facts quite well, and the
great. That's right. Yeah. He's been to Randwick on a Saturday before.
I've got the battle scars to prove that too.
That's true.
It's good. You're in the right position and the right mindset to go forward and take advantage of your skill sets to help people and help yourself. That's a special skill, and I think you're on the right path and a good journey to do that. But look, Rob, I'd just like to say thank you for coming on for the program. And unfortunately, Carl couldn't make it today, unfortunately, to be our other guest. He would have his love some questions for you, but we'll definitely get you back on some roundtables for data science we've got coming up later on in the year. I think your opinions would be invaluable, and also after you graduate too. So I think you're well immersed and ready to go.
No worries.
It's good. But look, thank you very much, and let's I wish you all the best and enjoy your graduation. And we'll talk soon. Okay.
No worries, Mark. Thanks a lot for having me. It's been great chatting, and I'm sure we'll keep in contact.
My pleasure.
Right. No worries. Have a good day, Mark. Have a good evening.
The information featured in this program is general in nature and does not take into account your personal circumstances, needs, or objectives. Guests appearing in the program may have commercial arrangements or associations with some of the companies, organizations, or foundations mentioned. Opinions expressed by the hosts or guests are personal of nature and not to be considered as advice or an inducement to purchase products or services. Before making any investment, insurance, or financial plan decisions, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise you on whether your decision is appropriate for you. This program is for informational purposes only.